Hey everyone, I'm Kari.
Hello, everyone. I am Bree.
And this is CSA Talk. Everyone, welcome back. Another week, another episode of CSI Talk.
Hi.
Before we get into today's episode, I just want to let you all know that this is a safe space for you. This is always going to be a safe space for everyone. Okay, so whenever we come here, just to the girls talking about their favorite science show without you. So, like, somebody to hear this, we love you. Okay. We're going to be here for you. So, well, today's episode. It's like we said last week, it would be a heavy one. Not necessarily a homicide. It would be ruled out as an accidental death. But still, the number of the episode is 19. We're still in season 1. And the name of the episode is Gentle, Gentle. You know what? It's kind of creepy, the translation of the name of the episode in my language, Jerry. Translated into resting peace. Okay, so the synopsis of the episode is the CSI team investigates the kidnapping of the infant child of a rich family. However, when the evidence shows that the family is hiding something, the case takes a dark turn. We're talking about this case literally the next day after the U.S. Coast Guard just found out debris from the ocean gay submarine.
It's string factoid of the Titanic. Yeah, to the casualties.
That was in the movie. It's that couple that decided to stay behind and they ended up being dying.
That's true, because the woman did not want to go on when the rescue boat, when there was mothers of children who needed to be on the guest boat.
Yeah, me and Brie, we love history, so both of us, we kind of study the Titanic.
It's also one of the things we have to study in the state.
Well, I studied because I wanted to get more knowledge, because getting more knowledge is good. But one thing that me and Bruno were talking about last night is how the name Titan is cursed.
And yeah, Kari knows more about it than I do.
Well, I believe that a few months before Titanic, the actual ship was set sail, writer wrote a book called Titan that was supposed to be this ship that was unsinkable, indestructible. And then it told the story of this ship. And this ship ended up sinking on the maiden voyage. And what happened is, a few months later, the very same thing happened to the Titanic. I believe that one passenger that was supposed to board the Titanic read the book and decided to sell their tickets because they saw that it was a bad omen. And the woman heard that the name of the submarine was Titan. I was immediately reminded of the fact that there was a book. I don't know if the book is still printed. I don't think it is, but maybe you can find it online. You just search Titan book, Titanic on Google. Titan is not a good name to give it to something.
And another show that I watched, there was once the people who lived in Eureka, some of the brainiacs, which was everybody minus one person was a brainiac in the show, were going on a spaceship called Titan, and they've been missing for 5 years.
Well, if you are Marvel fan or Marvel nerd like me and Brie are, you will know that Thanos is home planet was called Titan, and they got destroyed. I think we have a moon on our solar system. I believe it's from Saturn. And decided to believe that there might be water on them. They know that there's some people making jokes about it. First of all, they're millionaires. Why would they really go there and watch a ship that already sank over 100 years ago? Yeah, through this small window. And all of that on the submarine, purely There was already problems with the submarine even before it set sail. They called the CSIs. They called the CSIs to investigate what happened. And apparently, implosion happened. An implosion is when an explosion happens inside the vessel. Apparently, it was quick. And I know people were making jokes about they're so rich. Why would they want to go to sea and do all of that? And at the end of the day, lives were lost. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're rich, if you're poor. Well, at the end of the day, lives were lost. I mean, the case of this episode that we're dealing with, this little baby is from a rich family. Would the CSI treat the case any differently if the baby was from a poor family? Absolutely not. They would have treated the exact same way. I mean, but I know that people are comparing what I had to those billionaires, to what is happening in Greece. I don't know if you guys know what is happening in Greece right now. There's refugee boats that a lot of people drowned. They were fleeing from war, and the boats overturned. But some people died in there in the news. Said that those rich men died instead of those refugees that did die. I think the news were a lot more concerned about the submarine because they were going to see the wreckage of the Titanic. And the name Titanic itself already holds a lot of history behind themselves. And that's why people are a lot more curious about that, because that tragedy happened more than 100 years later, almost a day that came spot that the Titanic sank. I think that's a warning from the victims that died on that tragedy to not go there, because tragedy is not entertainment. I don't think anyone should go there and just to consume themselves. But anyways, so that's the next of the episode is the CSI team investigates the kidnapping of an innocent child of a rich family. However, when the evidence shows that the family is hiding something, the case takes a dark turn. In the beginning, they think the child is missing. Not dead. So when a child goes missing, they issue in the U.S. at least, they issue an amber alert. It means that they have a short amount of time to find a child. And I'm probably have seen other crime shows, and it's probably just that I said you should find a child within a number of hours. The child has greater likelihood to be alive, which is true. I've studied the stats that. It's true. At this point, they didn't know if the child was alive or not, but they were hoping that the child was alive. When a child goes missing, the investigators have to work on the assumption that the child is alive. Until it's proven otherwise, the child is alive. The first 48 hours are very important for the case. In the middle of the night, the mother of the child, Chloe Anderson, she wakes up and she goes to her son's room and she finds out that he's missing from his crib. The window is wide open with a ladder against the shadow of the house. And she also finds a ransom letter inside the crib saying that the kidnapper will call with instructions in 6 hours. When I first saw this episode, kind of reminded me of Jemaine Ramsey, which is still unsolved, by the way. People don't know it. Who killed her. So Grissom arrives in the scene, and he asks for the note, and he tells the parents that whoever touched the note before them has their son, which makes sense. I mean, we know from CSI and even from CSI Vegas, everything leaves a trace.
Can never count out the card's exchange principle.
Every contact leaves a trace.
Everything leaves a trace, right? So, which means that the kidnapper left a trace on the note. On the following morning, Catherine is at the scene, and she is told that the family had a security system. But surprisingly, it was never put on. That's kind of weird, huh? So there is some actually big... becomes really interested in that open soda bottle on the kitchen counter. And the father says that he opened it up. Father, his name is Steve, before he called 911. And grandson was like, okay, give me an unopened one. And a piece of the baby's clothing. The baby, his name it was Jack. And then and he needs blood samples from the entire family. Grissom needs blood samples. He'd be needing blood samples from everyone in the case and probably his own employees, right? And
yep.
He tells Sarah to have the notice examined, and he needs to take every computer and printer from the house with her because the notes could have been printed from the house. Printers have unique signatures, and they have memories too. You know, printers have memories too. That's why it kind of reminded me of the JonBenet and Ramsey case, that the printer that was from the house was kept inside the house. Okay, we'll talk about this later. So Nick is given the sodas. Grissom tells him that he needs to go back to the lab and open the unopened bottle. At 72 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, for my girlies that don't know what 72 degrees Fahrenheit is,
that's like 31 degrees Celsius. If I'm doing my math correctly.
No, that would be 22.22 Celsius. That's kind of that's not cold, but that is not hot either. So okay, why that temperature? I don't know. Oh, because that's room temperature. So he's told that he needs to open at 72 degrees Fahrenheit because that will be room temperature, maybe for the time of the year. Warwick is told that he has to canvass the area, the entire property, to find any sign of the kidnapper. Warwick actually is able to find a footprint in the dirt near the ladder. And when he climbs the ladder, he finds a spider web in the corner of the window of the baby's room. And he's like, it would be really hard for someone to enter the room without destroying the web. I mean, if you guys ever went through plates and there was like a spider web nearby, you would have to touch it.
Yep. Because it sticks to you like silk.
It really touches you. Like, it sticks to you and you have to try and get rid of it. You're not going to get rid of it unless you put it on the wife of a scene. But Grissom is like, oh, but spiders can build a web in just a few hours. And at this point, you don't know how long it has been that the baby has disappeared. Grissom also finds two separate and distinctive pairs inside the crib. And he noticed that there is a pine smell from a specific spot in the carpet. And that's if it's positive for blood. And he and Warwick, they're like, Zach, the baby was killed before you left him. So now they realize they're not looking for a missing baby anymore. They're looking for a dead baby. So a document inspection expert is brought in. And he tells Sarah that there are three vertical dots on the ransom notes. And that indicates that the printer drum has a spot on it. Then Sarah goes and looks at the family's printers, and she realizes there are no dots, which means that the printer, the ransom note, did not come from the house. So she tells Grissom that, and he tells her to check the printers and Steve's, the father's company, that it's possible that one of his co-workers, their employees that don't like him, might be behind everything. Mind you, Grissom is already having it. Like, he is already himself at this point. He's already mad at the world. I mean, who wouldn't be? Like, this little baby just died.
Yep.
So back in the house, Warwick actually determines that the shoe print that he found is from the gardener brood. But the gardener has been out of town for 3 days, so it could have been him. So he and Grissom, they are alerted to the barking sound of the scent dogs. This is a very upsetting scene in the episode, which means that the scent dogs smell the body. So they run to the golf course. It's really upsetting because Grissom is the one that is running towards the body.
and the sound goes off during it. We see the silent scream of the mom.
The baby's body is found under wraps in a blanket under a statue. Grissom is like, I'm going to take the pictures and I'm going to take the body to the coroner. It's so upsetting because Grissom was not only mad about the fact that the baby boy was killed, but he was mad because now he was his truth. If we think that we've seen Grissom angry during the singing of the song, and this is like this early Grissom being angry about the fact that not only a kid died, it was a little boy. It was just a baby. And the way that the body was positioned, it means that it was handled with care. So there's not a serial killer. It's not someone who just woke up, decided to kill a little boy, and just a killer out of the street, which he would have treated the body completely different. This was something that was done with reverence. So the autopsy reveals that Zach, he died from asphyxiation, but there's no marks on the body. And Grissom realizes that the blanket that he was wrapped in was like, oh, maybe the abductor wraps the baby too tight and suffocated him. But Doc Robin says, well, it is a possibility. They're able to extract fiber from the throat, and they've realized that he has an actual cracked sternum because somebody manhandled him. Not only baby, until you're in your early 20s, your bones are actually still very
malleable.
Malleable. I don't know if you got a broken bone. I have. Or, trust me. No one wants to have to break a bone, but until your early 20s, your bones, they're still currently using its health into the others. You have a lot more bones when you're a little baby than when you're an adult. So your bones, they are not that hard. That hard, which means that they're not that hard, but they're that much easier to break. That's it. If you do not have any extra conditions that make them even easier to break. But also means that when you break a bone, they don't actually break. They don't actually, break into two parts. They just change position. You just change their position. It still hurts a lot, but they're not set in stone. So Catherine and Grissom, they speak to the parents, and they said that the little boy was just found 500 yards from the house. The girlies said don't know what that would be in meters.
That's less than a block away.
That 500 yards, that would be less than half a kilometer away. Less than half a kilometer. And he was wearing clean clothes and wraps in a blanket and carefully laid under a statue. That is not consistent to how a stranger or an abductor would treat a victim. And then Grissom also says that they never got a room to call. I will never forget to call a wealthy family for a ransom. So they're like, this was an inside job. And the family is freaking out because now they're the suspects. Warwick shows up and says that the blood they found actually belongs to Tyler, their oldest son.
And they find out Tyler has been in legal trouble before.
Yep. Tyler actually says that he broke the window, the next window, while he was playing baseball. When he tried to replace the window, he cut himself and tried to clean up the blood using quarantine cleaner. Tyler also said that he babysat his brothers the previous night when his parents were up in the streets at a homeowners meeting. And he has a record, as Bree said, because he has been expelled twice for physical altercation. That's cool. But he said that he would never hurt his baby brother. Oh, great. So he draws the line at his baby brother. Great to know that. Catherine and Grissom, they search that house from top to bottom. They are searching for any type of evidence they can find to know what happened to that baby boy. Because now Grissom is mad. That Grissom is really mad. He really wants to know what happened to that baby boy. Catherine comes across an empty plastic storage in which is a wrapper for an Egyptian cotton baby blanket, and grits some signs of fear of green stains and islands in the father's closet, in the roll off of wine plastic trash bags in the kitchen. That is suspicious. In the lab, Nick is recreating the conditions of the open bottle of soda, and he logs in his findings, and he tells Grissom that he picked up the smell of alcohol from Steve's bottle, and the fingerprints on the ransom note belongs to Major Fenway, which is the father's secretary. And Sarah actually determines that it was her printer that was used to print the ransom notes, because her printer has the three vertical dots on the sample page. And when she's brought into question, she is actually pretty surprised that it was her printer that was used to print the ransom note. And she says that anyone in the office could have used her printer. One of the hairs from the baby's ribs is a match to her. And she said that she and Steve's, the founder, they had an affair, but they ended it. And the CSIs were like, oh, the affair ended because Gwen, Steve's wife, became pregnant with the baby. And they're like, oh, so Nidra decided to kidnap the baby to get even and end the marriage between Gwen and Steve. And Catherine's like, oh, maybe Steve set the whole thing up because he didn't want to have the obligation of taking care of a newborn. Okay. So it makes sense. Goes and asks Steve about it. And he tells Grissom, yeah, he did have the affair. But he was like, yeah, Nidra would never kill a baby. He said he ended the affair when he found out that his wife was pregnant. And 1 week ago, he had Nidra up in his house to watch the babies leave, to accept the reality of the fate. Excuse me, sir. Why would you take your former mistress to your house to watch your son sleep? Like, why would you do this? The mapping. And Grayson is like, huh. Yeah, you lied before. I'm not buying this. Nick, on the other hand, on the test, showed that the bottle that belonged to the father was actually opened 6 hours before the father claimed that it was. And Grissom thinks that the Andersons caught Nidra killing Zach, and then they tried to cover it up. And it doesn't make any more sense, because I think if the mother saw that happening, she wouldn't cover it up, especially not to her husband's mistress. During the conversation, a reporter arrives and she shows Steve's private pictures of him and Nidra, because it has gone public. Apparently Gwen didn't know that her husband was having an affair, maybe. Psychologists that actually puts the theory that Gwen is actually the one that killed the baby to get back on her cheating type. I mean, thinking like this is not really far-fetched, but Brass actually is in for this idea, because Gwen had a charge against her for shaking baby syndrome. Because when Tyler was a child, she shook him a lot. And they had to take him to the hospital, and she has a record for child abuse. Okay, she was a mother for the first time. I don't think she actually knew what she was doing. When she's questioned, she said that she shook Tyler that much because he was choking on food. But doctors didn't find any evidence on this, because by the time the food was found on the kitchen floor, Gwen was already at the same level of the unbagged mother. And before the questioning ends, Grissom reveals that the golf course that the neighbors, the Anderson house, uses vegetable dye to paint his grass green. Why would you use vegetable dye to paint your grass? Isn't your grass already green? There's plenty of ways to keep your grass green.
This is a state that's not known for a lot of rain.
So the same dye was actually found on the nylons in the father's closet. And the receipts link them to Gwen, even though they have this, Gwen is allowed to walk. And Kristen and Catherine, they are watching her walk to the car. And they realize something. They've noticed that she won't touch or interact with her younger son, Robbie. She won't interact with him. So Sarah actually tells Grissom the exact time of death was around 9 p.m. The fiber that they found on his throat is a flame retardant material called, okay, if I'm not saying this correctly, and you're a scientist and you know how to pronounce this, I'm really sorry. That is actually sound and things that are made to be near fire and flames. So it's actually like the gloves that you use to grab the pans out of the stove of the things that you just cooked. And Grissom actually realizes what happens. So he and Sarah, they go back to the house and they find the oven mitt that is the same color as the fibers they found on Zach's. So Catherine and Warwick, they go over the 911 call made from the house at 4:30 a.m. Steve was the one that made the call, and Gwen can be heard in the background panicking, losing her mind. And Warwick actually measures the stress level on her voice. I don't know if that's possible or not. I know right now, on our time period, it is possible, but I don't know if back then it was.
They got a lot of their stuff from actual scientists.
Probably it was. And Professor Sun was genuine, and no other call was made from the night. No other calls from the house was made. So Catherine actually believes that Tyler is the one responsible. Warwick checks his cell phone records. And in a meeting between Catherine Grissom and the family lawyers, the CSIs, they're like, you have 3 questions to ask. It's like that genie in the bottom situation. You have like 3 wishes for each family member. Okay, Grissom is like, I have no questions because his team has already interpreted the evidence. Sometime around 11 p.m., Steve made himself a drink and made a plan on what to do with the body. Because there was no amount, there was no dollar amount on the ransom note. Because no parents would actually put a number to the lives of their kids.
Correct.
Yeah. He went to his office to print the note. So the police wouldn't be able to trace this, or so he thought. But we're talking about our two sides here. They're at the best of what they do. And in the meantime, Gwen actually wraps Zach's body in a blanket from the closet and laid him to rest on the golf course, which is how she got the green dye on her nylons. And she also put down a plastic bag from the pantry to keep the body dry. That shows concern and care for the body. So when Steve came back home, he put the ladder against the house to make it look like somebody used to kidnap Zach. And by the time, because at the time of death was 9 p.m., he and the baby and Robbie were under Tyler's care. So now Gwen has to admit that Zach wasn't suffering, and she accidentally suffocated him with a pot holder. And then they came up with the kidnap story to try and save everyone. Yep. But when Warwick is told about the confession, he gives Grissom the 911 call Tyler made earlier in the evening. So there was another 911 call made earlier than the one that they had. On the call, Tyler is the one that is screaming at his younger brother, saying, what did you do, Robbie? What did you do?
What's it with the name Robbie? So CSI.
I don't know. There's a lot of Robbies on the CSI world. Tyler actually tells them what happened that night. He was babysitting his brothers, but he got distracted because he was having a conversation with his girlfriend on his phone. By the time he walked up, the baby wasn't moving. But actually, if you watch the episode, you will realize that Robbie is actually trying to play with his baby brother, and he smothers him by accident. He called 911, but he got disconnected because of the chaos. When his parents walked in, saw him to performing CPR, and things got even more crazy. And Tyler says that he performed CPR so hard, he cracked his brother's throat. If you see a baby that needs CPR, you cannot use both of your hands to perform CPR. You have to actually use two fingers. You have to actually use two fingers to revive the baby's heart and give air to the baby through the nose and the mouth. You know, that's how you do CPR to a baby. And they've said that they didn't tell the truth because they wanted to protect Robbie, and they didn't want him to grow up with the stigma of the boy who killed his brother. And Grissom said that Robbie is 3 years old, and he is completely unaware of his actions, so it means that legally, he would not respond to anything.
Yeah.
But Steve says that his wife would rather go to jail than have anybody know that Rob did it. And Grissom's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Which means that they were going to file the death as an accident.
Yeah.
Robbie would not go to jail. Robbie would not go to jail because legally he would not be, first of all, legally he would not be able to respond because he is a kid and he was unaware of what he probably did not even know that what he was holding, he probably thought it was a toy. So Gwen is actually released from jail and tells Catherine that Robbie actually did not mean to do that. And Catherine and Grissom, it's gone her out of PD and help her protect her from all the reported outside. When I actually watched this episode, it reminded me of a case. I'm pretty sure everyone, probably if you live in the U.S., you probably know what happened. You probably know about the case. If you don't, you might have heard it because if you watch BuzzFeed Unsolved, because I've talked about BuzzFeed Unsolved a lot here, and there's an episode they did on the case. Well, there's a case that this Missy Little Girl's case, JonBenet Ramsey. It's been, according to the article that I'm looking at right now, it's from Independent from the UK. It's been 26 years that the investigation is. So that's literally a quarter of a century that an investigation is. Been going on for this long. I mean, okay. So she was reported missing the day after Christmas in 1996. And she was reported missing, was knowing a lot. It's like the house where everything happened is on sale, if I'm not mistaken. I saw it on TikTok a while ago. The house is on sale where everything happened. He was is knowing. So on the 26th, I'm going to map out all the timeline according to the independent.org.
It was 1997.
No, she was murdered. She's found murdered on 26th of December of 1996. Her mother called 911 at 5:52 a.m. because she's reporting her daughter missing. And everyone in the house, the people that lived in the house was JonBenet, her mother Patsy, her brother Burke was 9 years old, and her father John. I think her father died recently. Her mother said that she found a ransom note on the stairs demanding $118,000, which was the exact amount of her husband's bonus cash that he got from his work, which it's kind of suspicious if you think about it. I think the authorities were like, oh, it could have probably someone that you know. Because if you got this much money, it's probably someone that you know. They searched the house. But it was snowing. This could have been an instance of the perpetrator walking into the house, doing whatever he did, walking out. And by the time the police arrived, the snow had already covered up the footprints. I mean, it was winter in the States, so I don't know to which range the snow fell, but it was a possibility.
It depends also on the state. in the part of the state.
So they couldn't find her. But the police asked him to do a sweep of the home again. And then she was found. They thought at first that it was a kidnapping, not a murder. Because a lot of people was trespassing. Like a lot of people. People going in and out of the house, leaving traces. And all the evidence is still called into question, even after almost 30 years. And during the early days of the investigation, everyone in the family gave the authorities their DNAs, but everyone has been excluded. I think we've seen enough to know that they get the DNA of the family to exclude them, especially if a crime is committed inside their house. On January 1997, the parents go and get their first interviewed. But the police was like, they should not have done that. But as it so happens, on April of 1997, the parents turned out to be suspects because she was found inside their house. But the autopsy was released in July of 1997. I'm not going to say, but it was only on March of 1998 that a grand jury is convened. Well, actually, it was over Colorado Springs. A detective is brought out of retirement because he had to handle the case. Jurors, they had to spend months looking over the evidence, even DNA that I had been my long call, even the teddy bear that they found. The investigators even interviewed her brother. He was 9 years old, but the grand jury was dismissed on October of 1999. On 2000, the family wrote a book saying that they were actually innocent of what happened. And in 2006, her mother was passed away. And it was on that very same year that a teacher, it's not even like a name, dude, but a teacher confessed to kidnapping this little girl. But he was cleared of this because his DNA did not match the sample on seen from CSI and one another criminalized as some sick and twisted people do like to take credit for stuff that they did not commit. It was on 2008, more than 10 years ago, that the entire family was cleared through DNA. Black Tech said there was no way that they could have done it. Because, I mean, she was found inside the trial, so some mix of the DNA, and then we know that people are coming in and out of the house all the time. But it was kind of recent, on November of last year of 2022, that the investigation that the Boulder police and district attorney, they said that this investigation is still ongoing, and they were going to be consulting with the Colorado Cold Case Review Team in 2013. And they say they had received more than 20,000 tips, letters, and emails, and traveled to 19 states to interview or speak with more than 1,000 individuals. And they are even working with FBI and CBI. If you know, CBI is kind of like the mentalist, they were the CBI. The Colorado's Department of Public Safety and several private laboratories across the country. So now the technology that we have right now in 2023 is a lot more advanced than the technology that they had when the crime was committed. I believe that was even this DNA expert that worked in this very, very famous case involving Robert Kardashian, that he went on. It was not him. It was this lab tech. He went on to say that
if it don't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, he did not say that. The lab tech that was involved, this DNA expert that was involved in on that case, he was brought in to testify, and he said that even if you go to the store and buy this package of unopened clothes, you're still gonna find some DNA from the place where the clothes was manufactured, from the person who touched it. because as we've seen in CSI, everything leaves a trace. As we see in CSI, everything leaves a trace. And why did it bring this place? And why? Well, because we're talking about Gentle. I mean, it's a case of this little boy who the team thought was missing, but actually was not missing. He was dead. And his death was actually accidental. There's a great episode about Sinasal, about Jambonet, Ramsey. This episode itself, Gentle was a very happy episode. Well, but I mean, at the end of the day, all I can really do is filter everything that you see and do the best you can. Oh, so
love y'all.
What are we talking about next week? We're talking about, we're still in season one. We're almost done with season one, but season one, episode 21, Justice is Served. I actually really love that episode. I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.